Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I am former U Sports quarterback Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge. Hodge, how you doing today?
I'm doing great today.
That's your Hodge impression.
It's rather cold in Manitoba right now. I don't want you to talk about any Canadian quarterbacks today.
That might be the worst impression I've ever heard, but I really enjoyed hearing you do it, and I would love to hear from our listeners what they think of your impression. We are joking, of course. I am John Hodge, joined by JC Abbott. Justin is away today. He'll be back next week. We have a ton to talk about, JC. Only 2 weeks left in the CFL regular season. We're going to get into the rundown in a moment, but first, we remind everybody, please sign up for our Three Down Nation newsletter. All the latest news, insight, analysis in your email inbox every single day. We're going to be adding some fun bells and whistles to it. Sign up now before the offseason hits, and you won't miss a single piece of news. Today, we're discussing the Montreal Alouettes, looking like $1 million.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders clinching first place in the West Division.
Marco Dubois getting ejected for the Red Blacks.
The Seattle Seahawks taking a CFL penalty.
And preview a heavyweight matchup in the OUA. But first,
things took an interesting turn in the race for the playoffs in the West Division as the Calgary Stampeders beat Hamilton to improve to 9-7, while the Edmonton Elks beat the Winnipeg Blue Bombers to make the teams 7-9 and 8-8, respectively. Hodge, did this week's results surprise you? And are you going to change your prediction that Edmonton will miss the playoffs?
They did surprise me because the Calgary Stampeders remembered how to play football. I don't know if it's just how they match up against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Let's not forget the Stampeders ran roughshod over the Tiger Cats back in week one, and the story was the same 18 weeks later in week 19. 37-20, the Stamps get the win. They look good defensively. They look pretty good offensively. It was their first victory in over a month, right? They were riding a four-game losing skid into this one, and I mean, look, sometimes optimally over the course of a season, you just be great all year. I don't know how realistic that is. Certainly, this team was a lot better in the first half of the season than the second half of the season. But the fact that they showed some of that first half magic, I think bodes really well for them going into the second half of the season. Also, the fact that they did it without Lorenzo Mauldin in the lineup, a guy who they just added via trade. The fact that they did it without left tackle Deontay Demery, I thought, was a good sign. So they're a little banged up, but they're still being productive. They're still making good plays. No Damon Webb on the back end, too. I thought Bailey Devine Scott got exposed at safety one time, but other than that, the defense looked solid. So that's all good, right? Calgary was a team that a couple weeks ago, I would have said, man, if they had, I still would have had them as a playoff team, but man, like, they were riding the line, which was remarkable given that they started the season 8-3. Well, guess what? They're now 9-7. I think they basically punched their ticket. They haven't formally done that, but they've just about punched that ticket. To me, the big surprise was in the other game, and I'm not surprised necessarily that the Elks won. I did pick them to cover a relatively short spread in this one, but to me, it was the tail of the game, and I'm here, JC, to bury Zach Collaros. Like, I think Zach has gotten a bad rap through most of this season. When watching the film, I see a lot of times where receivers downfield are not necessarily open. I see suspect protection along the offensive line or from other blockers who are checking in for the Blue Bombers. I'm not going to say Zach should be the MOP, but I do think that the film has exonerated Zach to some extent. I think he's been better than his stat line would show. And I think PFF's numbers back that up. Coming into week 19, he was third in the CFL at the quarterback position with a season-long grade of 86.6. He had 18 big-time throws and only 14 turnover-worthy plays. Now, he was also almost leading the CFL in interceptions, which I know is an ugly number. He has thrown too many picks this year, but his turnover-worthy plays is fewer than Bo Levi Mitchell and Nathan Rourke, both of whom are going to be, I think, at this point, pretty much guaranteed, up for MOP out of the East and West divisions, respectively. That said, he was terrible in this game, JC. Awful. He had many opportunities to deliver deep shots against this Edmonton Elks defense that was giving him up like candy. He did not take advantage. Underthrown balls, overthrown balls. He was credited with one touchdown and two picks on the day. Obviously, the touchdown was all on Tarya Wilson. Maybe the best catch we will see in professional football, dare I say all football, in 2025. Ironically, maybe the better one was Robert Carter Jr.'s interception earlier this year for the BC Lions. But that catch was unbelievable. Obviously, that's the receiver, not Zach. And then I also thought between Brock Mogensen, who dropped what should have been a pick, and Kenneth Logan Jr., who dropped what should have been a pick, it could have been four interceptions on this day for Zach Collaros. When you are looking to lead your team to the playoffs, right, in a key game, I expect you to play your best football. Zach Collaros not only did not play his best, he played his worst. So I'm not changing my prediction, JC, and we'll get a little bit into the race. I still think Edmonton's going to miss, but I did have Edmonton higher than Winnipeg on my ranking for our power rankings this week on my ballot for our rankings. And I think if the playoffs started today, I think Edmonton will go further than Winnipeg. I think they're the better team right now. But I just think because of that game the Bombers have ahead, I think they're going to sneak in. But I think at this point it's going to be as the crossover team, which means they're going to meet a train, a powerful, powerful heavyweight train in the Montreal Alouettes. But we'll get into that in the next segment. How about you, JC? How do you see these West Division playoff rankings filling out?
Well, first of all, I was also disappointed by Zach's performance. And I've been slightly less pleased with him throughout the season than you have been. There's been some tremendous, tremendous performances in there. But I think Zach at this point in his career just lacks consistency. And you laid it out there, he could have had four interceptions. I would say he could have had five interceptions in that game because that tremendous catch by Ontario Wilson hit Chaelin Garnes directly in the chest first, right?
True.
And if he had squeezed that, we're not getting a spectacular touchdown that goes in the positives for Zach. We're actually getting another negative. I think we were very close to a five-pick performance from Zach in that just about every time he looked deep, the ball was not thrown well, and that's a concern for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But I still think they're going to make the playoffs, just like you do, because the Edmonton Elks did themselves no favors. And I think we need to get into the late-game decisions by head coach Mark Killam to attack the game the way that he did in such a conservative manner when his team had lost their large lead and had it whittled down to 5 points. The Edmonton Elks needed to win this game by 13 points in order to get the tiebreaker over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Now, 13 points exactly technically ties the season series between these two clubs. But because of the schedules that they both have remaining, it would have ensured that the Elks, had they done their job and won out, or frankly, even just won one game and the Bombers lost two of theirs, that they would have had a better record against West Division opponents, which is the next tiebreaker down the long list of tiebreakers when you're deciding the standings. They had a shot at that late in that game, Hodge. They had the ball in Winnipeg territory with time expiring and a lead. And Mark Killam chose to be conservative. And then on third and two with 10 seconds left, He didn't gamble. He punted the ball away. And frankly, that was the wrong decision for his football team. I understand the risk associated with throwing it deep. Yes, you could have an interception, return for a big play. Maybe you lose the game. But if you get that in the end zone and you get a two-point conversion after, the potential ramifications are huge. Your odds of making the playoffs go from a slim, you know, single-digit margin to up into the double digits. I would put them even as close to 25% if you get those 13 points. But Mark Killam made no attempt to do so. I think Cody Fajardo was pretty PO'd with that decision at the time. And I think it's going to prove to be the wrong one for this football club, because everything else they've done right now over the last number of weeks has shown that they're competitive, that they're going to fight to the end, and they're going to make this a playoff race. But now they've put themselves distinctly behind the eight ball by not being aggressive at the end of that game and going for what would have been crucial, crucial points.
I agree with you, JC, and I think Mark Killam is going to be a great head coach. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think the way that he has right? I mean, the Elks definitely slid way back to start this year from where they finished last year. I think there's an argument to be made that they should have kept more continuity from 2024, certainly the latter part of the year, into 2025. That said, I mean, I think they're going to finish with a better record than they did last year. They were 7-11 last year. They're already 7-9. They're not going to finish with the worst record. And I think obviously their arrow is pointing up. I think that personnel wise, they've had a bunch of young guys pop off. That they got Carter O'Donnell back on the offensive line after like a 5-year excursion to the NFL. They got him back in that province of Alberta. So I'm bullish on what the Elks are going to be able to do heading into next year. Their arrow is definitely pointing up. But I did think this was a rookie head coaching mistake from Mark Killam. He needed to be more aggressive there, because at the end of the day, let's break it down in detail. So the Bombers host the Riders. We'll talk more about the Riders later in the show. The Riders have nothing to play for. If the Bombers win this game, they haven't clinched a playoff spot, but they're darn close. They then host the Montreal Alouettes in week 21. And it should be noted that game will be played the day after the Tiger Cats finish their season against the hapless Red Blacks. The reason that I mention that and the reason that's relevant is if the Tiger Cats win that game, regardless of what the Alouettes do from here on out, the Alouettes will finish second in the East. So if the Tiger Cats beat the Red Blacks on October 24th, that means the Montreal Alouettes will have nothing to play for in Winnipeg on the 25th. And with nothing to play for and a playoff game the next week, I think the odds of them dressing Davis Alexander and a bunch of their other top players is just about 0%. So in other words, the Bombers are likely to play the B-team Rough Riders this week. And I also think it's likely they're going to play the B-team Alouettes in week 21. Could the Bombers lose one or both of those games? It's possible. I don't think it's likely. And if they win both, they are in the playoffs. If they win just one, they've still got a really good chance at the playoffs, because the only way for the Elks to catch the Bombers, if the Bombers win one of their last two, is to beat BC this week. That's a tall order. The game is in Vancouver. The Lions are still fighting to finish second in the West Division. Well, if the Elks win that game, they then have to host the Calgary Stampeders in week 21 and knock them off, a team that, again, is still pushing for that home playoff game in the West. And it should be noted, that game in week 21 between Calgary and Edmonton is on the 24th of October. The Lions don't finish their season until the 25th. In other words, the Stampeders are likely to be in a position where they're still fighting for second. The Lions don't play until the following day. In other words, go ahead, Jason.
Hodge, I hate to interrupt. I think your math's wrong there. If the Bombers win one game, they're in, because they have the tiebreak over Edmonton.
That is not true, and I will explain why in just a second. Okay. I appreciate you raising this, because I'm sure some people are confused. The way that Edmonton can still catch the Bombers, if the Bombers, because yes, the Bombers have the head-to-head tiebreaker. If all three teams, Calgary, Edmonton, and Winnipeg, finish 9-9, three-way tie, the tiebreaker is head-to-head. And that means like among the three teams. And because the Stampeders swept Winnipeg 3-0 this year, Calgary would be the top team from that three-way tie. Edmonton would be the second team from that three-way tie. And the Bombers at 9-9 would miss the playoffs. So the Bombers can win one of their last two games and still miss the playoffs. Obviously, if they lose both those games, they're likely to finish out of the playoffs. If they win both, they're definitely in. But the Bombers can win one of their last games and still miss the playoffs. Now, again, that would require the Elks to beat BC this week. Tough game. And Calgary in week 21. Also a tough game. Like, on paper, the Bombers play Saskatchewan and Montreal. It's easy to look at that and go, wow, tough schedule. But again, the circumstances of the standings, I think it's an easy schedule because Saskatchewan has nothing to play for this week. Montreal will likely have nothing to play for this week. Well, guess what? The Lions have a ton to play for this week against Edmonton, and the Stampeders will likely have something to play for against Edmonton in week 21. All this to say, the Elks can still make it, but if they had beaten Winnipeg by more than 13 points, the road to that playoff win or that playoff game is much easier than the current situation where they really need everything to fall their way. And if they do get to 9-9, JC, man alive, would they not deserve it? Wins against BC and Calgary at this point of the year, extremely tough to come by. The Lions are the number one team in our power rankings for a reason. No, they don't have the best record in the league. They're three games behind Saskatchewan. They're a game behind Hamilton, but they are playing the best football, in my opinion. So the West playoff picture will become a lot clearer after this week, but certainly lots to watch for if you're a Stamps fan, a Bombers fan, or an Elks fan. This situation could have become very clear if the Bombers had gone into Commonwealth and won. We would know who the four playoff teams coming out of the West would be. After the Elks got the upset victory, things remain as clear as mud. You don't want to keep talking about the West playoff race, JC?
Yeah, I think you've laid it out perfectly, Hodge. It's compelling.
Well,
it's almost as if it's almost as if you don't need one division to make a compelling playoff race. But I digress.
Well, if there was one division, let's have that conversation, because I do think that this is something the CFL is seriously considering. There is only two byes up for grabs. Well, right now, it's kind of by default going to the Hamilton Tiger Cats, unless the Montreal Alouettes can catch them. In a one division CFL, you'd have the Tiger Cats at 10-7, and then BC, Calgary, and Montreal all at 9-7, vying for that second bye. So I do think it would be a lot more compelling in a one division CFL. You've got four teams currently vying for one bye, and had the Bombers won this past week, they would also be 9-7. You'd have five teams vying for the final bye that's available and hosting what would be one of two CFL semifinals rather than an East final and a West final, which, I mean, by the way, again, traditionalists will complain about, well, but it's classic, it's East to West. Well, we've had East finals with the BC Lions in them. If the BC Lions are playing in an East final, that by definition is dumb. So I'm not attached to East-West final. I'm not saying it's ridiculous or wrong for people to be attached to them. I'm not making fun of anybody. But when you've got the BC Lions in an East final multiple times, I don't really understand how it's an East final at that point.
Well, we're so West, it's almost East, isn't it? Like, just, it's round, goes that way.
That's if you believe the Earth is round, JC. That's if you believe the Earth is round.
Oh, well, that's another podcast conversation. That
is another podcast conversation.
Definitely need to have.
And I'm just joking. Though I do believe Travis Kelce went on his podcast last year and said, by his estimation, about 30% of any given NFL locker room believes the Earth is flat, which I thought was a remarkable quote and also kind of alarming. But anyway, we'll steer away from that conversation. The thing I want to add here, JC, really quickly, is we've also had, because again, I think we might be getting an announcement at Grey Cup that these playoff rankings are changing. That is not inside info. That is speculation. But Stuart Johnston has made it very clear that there is more change coming, not to the game, right? Not to the rules, but there's more change coming. This to me, and he said this type of thing is on the table. I will
is
also
that be instead of the halftime show. Is it? It's just Stuart Johnston at a podium announcing changes.
Well, we don't know who the halftime show is, though I still think that my suspicion still is that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, if they're not in the game, they're going to trot out for the halftime show just so that they can say they've been to six straight Grey Cups. That's what I think they should do.
It can be like an old school Grey Cup or Super Bowl when they have like the kids marching band at halftime instead of the...
Well, I was going to say the Bombers just run skelly, like offense, defense, you know, like not even in pads because, you know, it's the end of the year. Everyone's banged up. Just, you know, I think it could be fun. Why not? Six straight Grey Cups. I mean, they could legitimately get there still, but it's looking less and less likely given the way that they're playing versus some of the other top teams in the CFL. But what I was going to say is when it comes to the divisions, right, we've had a Grey Cup before. That was Winnipeg, Saskatchewan. That is not an East-West Grey Cup. We've also had multiple Grey Cups with America in them. Like, we've literally had the United States in Grey Cups and won a Grey Cup. So, like, it's like, oh, it's classic, it's tradition, it's East-West. Well, no, it hasn't always been. And there was nothing wrong with the Grey Cups those years, right? I don't think anybody looks it back at 2007 like, how dare they have a Winnipeg-Saskatchewan Grey Cup? Like, it's like, oh, no, it was Winnipeg-Saskatchewan. Okay, cool. Granted, Winnipeg was an East team at that time, but if you look at a map, you know it was not really an East-West Grey Cup. It was a Central-Central Grey Cup, and that's okay. Central-Central is allowed. At the end of the day, I think we just want good football. Anyway, I digress. We'll move on. The Montreal Alouettes looked awesome against the Ottawa Redblacks on Thanksgiving, knocking them off 30-10 and living up to their number two billing in the Three Down Nation power rankings. JC, with the team still eligible to finish first in the East Division, should fans in Montreal start getting excited about the possibility of hosting the East Final?
I think you should be cautiously optimistic. Hamilton Tiger Cats can still take care of business. They just need to win their last game to secure this, but the Alouettes, I think, are the hottest team in the East right now. It's not particularly close. Did they look like $1 million against Ottawa? I would say that's a little bit of hyperbole because I still think there is more for them to do, right? They beat the doors off the Red Blacks, and I don't even think that was their best possible performance. In fact, I think Davis Alexander told Pablo Herrera-Vergara, our Montreal contributor, after the game that it was the worst game of his career, which I don't know that I necessarily agree with, but certainly it wasn't a game where he had to take it over and throw for 350 yards and make a bunch of big plays. They just got the job done, and that's what this Montreal Alouettes team is doing right now. I think, frankly, they deserve that first round bye based on their recent performances and what they've looked like since Davis Alexander has come back. And I'm thrilled that this race for the top spot in the East remains compelling because for some reason, the Hamilton Tiger Cats seem dead set on stubbing their toe at every possible opportunity right now. The Montreal Alouettes, I think, are the better team. And if the Tabbies don't watch out, they're going to be going home whether they finish first or not.
I don't think fans in the Belle Province should start getting excited about the East Final because I think the odds of them hosting the East Final are extremely low. The only way that they can host this game is if the Tiger Cats lose to Ottawa in week 21. And the Tiger Cats are on bye this week. Like, they get a whole week to sit back, rest up, watch the film, get angry about how badly they played against the Calgary Stampeders, and beat what's going to be, is it even going to be the B squad that we see from the Red Blacks? This could be the C, it could be the D squad, JC. It could be the backups of the backups of the backups. Like, and frankly, I thought the Red Blacks erred a little bit. I thought they should have gone even younger in their lineup against the Montreal Alouettes this past weekend. Like, Dustin Crum, I think we all know what he is at this point. I don't think Dustin Crum is a bad player by any stretch of the imagination. I like some of the things he can do, but he is limited, right? And he put up 10 points against the Alouettes. Obviously, that is not good enough. So I would have liked to see Tyree Adams. Maybe we will get Tyree Adams before the end of the year. I would have liked to see more youth elsewhere, right? I He wasn't in a starting job, but I wanted to see Aiden John play more in this game. Defensive end out of St. Mary's University, Canadian, his third year, who I think has sky high potential for the Ottawa Redblacks, right? There were more guys on this team who I thought, man, like this is a good young player who deserves more of an opportunity. And whether it's their practice roster, where else, I want to see even more guys get shots as time goes on. And that might not help them win games, but it might help them prepare for 2026. And they can use that to their advantage a little bit, getting kind of an early read on who should be back, who should not be back, right, this offseason. So if you're the Hamilton Tiger Cats, you win and first is yours. I do think that the Montreal Alouettes are going to win this week, but they go to Winnipeg against a potentially very hungry Blue Bombers team in week 21 at full strength. Can the Alouettes win that game? Absolutely they can. But if they bring the B squad, I suppose they'll bring the A squad if they still have any chance of first place. But again, the Ticats play before they do in week 21. So it's entirely possible that the Alouettes will be eliminated from first place contention by the time that week 21 game rolls around. So I do not like Montreal's chances of finishing first. If the Ticats somehow lose this game, absolutely, I think the Alouettes can do it. But I mean, if you were to, I'll ask you this, JC, if you were the odds maker and this Ottawa at Hamilton game was this week, what would the point spread be?
Which version of the Ticats are showing up?
Well, you don't know that. You just have to bank on what the Ticats are in general.
I'm probably putting it at 10.5.
I had the exact same thought. Yeah. It's not 13.5 like it was in Montreal this week, which, by the way, they covered, thank God, because I picked them to cover it. But the Ticats, I think it's probably a double-digit spread. And honestly, at this point, I would pick the Ticats to cover that spread. I think they win that game by a couple touchdowns. I really do. So for me, I don't think that the Alouettes should get excited about hosting the East Final. The only caveat I will say to that is they should get excited about what this team can do if and when they get to the East Final, because this Alouettes team is looking fantastic, like the most complete team in the East. And at this point in time, I think if you're picking a Grey Cup game, just based on how these teams look right now, I know that come playoff time, things can change. And I know that come playoff time, obviously home field advantage will play into the hands of certain teams. But right now, the best team in the West is BC. The best team in the East is Montreal. Right now, those are the two seeds. So they will theoretically host playoff games in the first round. For Montreal, that's guaranteed. For BC, that's not right now. But I would not at all be surprised, JC, if we were watching a BC Winnipeg Grey Cup game in Winnipeg come next month, which I think was the actual matchup in 2006 when the Grey Cup was in Winnipeg. It was not the matchup in 2015, but two Grey Cups ago, I believe that's the same matchup we got. We could get it again. What a treat that would be between two teams playing their best football right now. Regardless, I mean, again, can the Alouettes finish first? Yes. Would I be feeling optimistic about that if I was an Alouettes fan? No, because the Alouettes did not take care of business against the Tiger Cats head-to-head. Now, granted, that's a long time ago. They played this team twice, week 6 and week 7, right? They haven't played this team since July, but it's almost like, JC, as I say every bloody week on this show, games before Labor Day matter, right? If you lose your back-to-back before Labor Day, you are you're potentially pooched. Oh, my apologies. My notes were, I was on the wrong page. Week 4, they played Montreal, and then week 14, they played Montreal. Hamilton-Montreal played each other, I should say. So one of those games was pre-Labor Day. And guess what? It mattered very much because it decided the season series that could decide where the East Final is played.
The only caveat I will lay out for what you just described in terms of the dynamic with the Hamilton Tiger Cats in the final week of the season is that sometimes when people are passing away, there's the phenomenon known as the last good day, where people get a burst of energy before they die and have a really strong finish. And I think sometimes the same thing can happen with dying football teams. The Hamilton Tiger Cats have already shown that they're a little bit liable to get caught looking ahead. I think the bye could be a good thing. It could motivate them. But when you're sandwiched between a bye and then the possibility of a home playoff game and another bye, or you think that's guaranteed because of your opponent, you can get caught napping. And the Ottawa Redblacks will know they have nothing else to play for except to impress and make one last impression. Hopefully they'll have some fresh young blood in that game that will be fired up, full of, you know, pee and vinegar, so to speak. And Bob Dice will know that, you know, the angel of death is around the corner with his scythe, and he's got one last opportunity to go out with a bang. And I think sometimes under those circumstances, there can be an upset that brews because one team gets caught napping and the other one is having that final burst of energy. I don't think we can completely rule that out for the final week of the season. It has trap game written all over it for the Ticats, in my opinion. As bad as I think Ottawa is, I just don't want to completely dismiss that possibility.
I'll just say, considering that Ottawa has actually had two football teams die in the last 30 years, maybe we could pick a better metaphor than the team dying. I've literally got, if you watch the video portion of the podcast, an Ottawa Renegades football behind me. Rip Renegades. So that's my only caveat, JC. I don't disagree with what you're saying. It could be a trap game. But let's not say that the Ottawa Redblacks are going to die. They're not going to die.
For this season. The season. The Redblacks are dying for this season. They will sustain themselves for many fruitful years after. And hopefully actually make the playoffs at some point in that era in the future.
I mean, they did last year. This year just went off the rails.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders clinched first place in the West Division after knocking off the Toronto Argonauts on Friday night. With nothing to play for over their final two regular season games against Winnipeg and BC, should the Roughriders rest players minimally or liberally?
I think they should rest players liberally. This is a team that is banged up. If you look at the injury report just from the first week of practice this week, I mean, they hit the practice field Monday. It's always kind of weird timing with Thanksgiving. You've got a game on Monday, but other teams are in day one of their prep for the next week already. You've got Habakkuk Baldonado, who's been starting for them in place of Shane Ray, limited with a foot injury. You've got Tavon Campbell. He was full participant, but still dealing with a head injury. Jackson Ford, limited with the knee. Trevor Harris, it's listed as load management, but did not participate. And we know, according to Justin Dunk's reporting, that he's been dealing with a shoulder. Micah Johnson, load management, limited in practice. Keyshawn Johnson, non-participant with a knee. Brett Lawther, non-participant with a back. Nelson Lacombo, limited with an ankle. Dante Myers, did not participate with an ankle. Roland Milligan Jr., did not participate, foot and knee. Shane Ray, did not participate with a neck. Marcus Sales, did not participate with an ankle. And then Tommy Stevens did not participate with a knee. Like, this team is banged up. And part of the advantage that you get with booking your playoff ticket early, right, punching it, especially that first place spot, is you get to rest everybody who you need to rest, right? And there's a ton of guys around the league who are playing hurt right now, right? There's a difference between injured and hurt. I don't think there's anybody in the professional football world who come this late in the year is healthy, right? You're either hurt or you're injured. Hurt meaning, okay, you're not healthy, but you can still play. Injured meaning, okay, you're hurt and you can't play. Maybe it's semantics, but that's the way I see it. And that's the way I've been told it is many, many times by people in and around professional football. So the Riders have a ton of guys who are hurt and a ton of guys who are injured. To me, you try to get your hurt guys healthy. You try to get your injured guys back to just merely hurt, if not preferably healthy. You need them for the West Final. The West Final's almost a month away. Yeah, rust can creep in a little bit, but I would rather have rusty players who are healthy than guys who are hurt. And you're also, by the way, with the bye, gonna need a week off anyway. So why not give them some extra time? If you really want some of these guys to stay fresh, they can practice a little bit, but you don't need to put them into a game where you are running the increased risk of an injury. To me, you rest everybody, you clear your practice roster, get all those guys up to the active if you have to. There are, by the way, salary cap restrictions on that. That should be noted. It's expensive come the end of the year to rest a bunch of guys. You cannot put players on the 6-game injured list this time of year. They have to go on the 1-game for the uninitiated. Players on the 6-game do not count against the salary cap. Players on the 1-game injured list do count against the salary cap. So if you move 20 guys to the one game injured, and you bring up your entire practice roster, then that gets very expensive very quickly. So there is a potential limitation there. But honestly, I don't think anybody in Ryderville gives a rip if this team goes over the salary cap. I think they want a damn great cup. That's what I think. So I would not at all be surprised if this team rested as many guys as they could. And frankly, I think that's the right decision.
I think there's a happy medium here, because I do think 3 weeks off at this stage in the year can do a little bit more harm than good. Because as much as your body is banged up, when you're in the thick of it, you can fight through a lot of those injuries. And then if you give it too much rest, things are going to seize up, your body's going to get stiff again, and you're not going to be able to perform as well when you come back. So how I would handle it if I was the Saskatchewan Roughriders is I would rest everybody this week in week 20. These guys would get the day off. We would treat it as a bye. In week 21, I would play a lot of those key guys, but I would play them sparingly. I would want them to get essentially preseason action, similar to what we see in that time of year, where you might be getting a half, or for some guys, a quarter. Enough to keep them loose, to keep them limber, to make sure that they're still sharp, but not so much that they're exposed to undue injury risk in a game that, frankly, you know, definitely won't matter for Saskatchewan, and at that point may not matter for the BC Lions much either, because they might have clinched second place by that point. I believe that is mathematically possible by that stage, that they will have second place in hand. And then you have the final bye before the playoff game to again get more rest in. I think it's key to have that little bit of action in that final week to ensure that you don't let the rust creep in. As much as teams dismiss it, I think it is a real thing. We've seen teams that have rested guys overly the last 2 years. The Montreal Alouettes in 2024, the Toronto Argonauts in 2023, both fell into that trap. Clinched way too early, took it way too conservatively with their players down the stretch, and lost any sort of momentum when they got into the playoffs, got their butts kicked in those divisional finals, those East Division finals for both teams, and didn't end up going to the Grey Cup, despite being the best team in the regular season, essentially all season long in both cases. The Saskatchewan Roughriders are too smart to repeat those errors, and I think they will ride the line much more effectively in terms of getting their guys ready for the playoffs while not exposing them to injury.
I get the momentum argument, I really do, but at the end of the day, the Saskatchewan Roughriders have not been a great football team for like a month, right? I think we need to address that. Yes, they have won two straight. Well, guess what? You beat Ottawa by a single score, and then you beat Toronto by a single score. The Jarrett Diggy Toronto Argonauts, by the way. And before that, they got their butts whipped by Montreal, and that was against McLeod Bethel Thompson, by the way, not Davis Alexander. And then they lost in Edmonton, a team that, yeah, is playing better football now than they've played all year, but is still a 500 team, right? So I'm not super impressed with what we've seen as of late by the Saskatchewan Roughriders. To me, this is not a matter of let's keep the momentum going. This is a matter of we need to find new momentum. The momentum is already gone. Rather than trying to maintain what we've got, let's see if we can get to the playoffs and press the gas pedal, right? Because it feels like they've been cruising since they beat the Bombers in the Banjo Bowl, right? That was the game that got them to 10-2, where they hadn't clinched first place yet, but it was pretty clear that they were going to be first place in the West Division. And prior to that, they were, I mean, a lot of their wins weren't even that close. They kicked BC, they kicked Montreal, they kicked Hamilton during that run. The only two teams, or the only two games they lost, were both to the Calgary Stampeders, right? Nobody except for the Stamps had beaten this team until mid-September, which is crazy. Since then, they've lost a couple of games. And again, yeah, okay, they beat Ottawa, they beat Toronto, but like, not impressive wins. So we'll see what the Riders do. To me, I don't think that shaking things up by putting in the backups is a bad plan at all. JC, there's a heavyweight matchup in the OUA this week as the undefeated Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks will visit the undefeated Western Mustangs in the last game of their regular season. Laurier has one of the top passing attacks in the country, while Western's rushing attack ranks first in all of Canada. JC, who do you see taking home this victory?
Well, this is going to be a must-watch game for anybody who cares about Canadian university sports. For anybody who cares about Canadian football, I would say get this on in a second screen beside the CFL games on Saturday. This is a must-watch game because of the star power here. In addition to it being the top two teams in the OUA, I would argue, Hodge, that this game features the guys who should be the top three candidates for the Heck Crichton Trophy, Canada's version of the Heisman, this season, right? And only one of them will get to be a finalist because only one guy comes out of the OUA. But I think the three most compelling arguments for the best player in the country right now are Calum Withers, the quarterback from Wilfrid Laurier, who has been sensational since transferring in from Ohio University south of the border. 2,109 passing yards so far, 21 touchdowns, and four interceptions. I believe the next closest guy, and I don't have the stats in front of me, Hodge, but I checked this last night. I believe the next closest guy has 14 touchdowns on the season. There is a wide berth between the top two in passing touchdowns right now, and Calum Withers is far away and above. Ethan Dolby, the running back from Western, has been absolutely outstanding, coming off a broken ankle last year. 1,200 plus yards, 14 touchdowns. He's been over 100 in all but one of his games and had multiple touchdowns in all but two. He is a workhorse back, and I think more explosive than some of the guys that we've seen through Western over the last number of years. And then the third guy who's sort of trailing with his hand up saying, what about me? What about me? Is Ethan Jordan, the outstanding receiver for Laurier, who is catching all of those Withers touchdown passes. He has 9 touchdowns on the season thus far in just 7 games and is probably, if all goes well in this game, going to surpass 1,000 yards receiving in, again, an 8-game regular season for the second time in his U Sports career. That is a remarkable accomplishment for him. So there is star power across the board here. I will lean with the better passing offense in this particular occasion, and the team that got it done last year, I think, has a bit more of a championship pedigree at this stage in the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks. I just think when you've got a quarterback playing at that level, with no disrespect to Evan Hillock, who's doing just fine over there in Western, but when you have a guy who gives you the possibility of being able to flip the field, to take deep shots, to control the game like that, it's just a different sort of offense. It gives you a different sort of confidence. It gives you a different ability to win games. And if they can just slow up Dolby a little bit, I'm not even saying hold him under 100 yards, hold him to 150 instead of 200. I think Withers can do enough with the explosive weapons around him to get the big plays needed to get the dub.
I like that layout, JC. I really do. I think when it comes down to it, Laurier is the team to beat. They're the number one team in the country this season. That said, they are allowing over 100 yards along the ground this season. And defensively, surprisingly, these two teams are both bottom 10 in the country in yards allowed per game. Now, it should be stated, these two teams have been so far ahead in a lot of their games that I think they've put in a lot of backups late in games, right? There have been games this year where, you know, Western is up 55-0 at halftime and the final score is 63-14 because they just don't play many of their players of consequence through the second half of the game. For those who are uninitiated, These are the two best teams in the OUA by a landslide. Laurier and Western met in the Yates Cup, which is the OUA championship game last season. Laurier won 51-31. The year prior, Western won the matchup 29-14. Laurier has been in the last two Yates Cups. Western has been in every Yates Cup since 2015, winning five of those nine games. So they're about 500, but they have been in every single one for a long time. And they've hosted the majority of those games too. So for me, this season, I've got Laurier winning, but this is, I think, as you said, JC, a must watch game. It's likely these two teams will meet again come playoff time, but this is the game to decide who finishes with a perfect 8-0 regular season record and gets the right to host the Yates Cup. I'm looking forward to it. And I do think, JC, that the eventual Heck Creighton Trophy winner from this season is in this game. Remains to be seen who gets the nod, but I do think that the Heck Creighton Trophy winner will be one of the players who you highlighted.
It's now time for JC's random neg lister. And I'm always scrolling through these neg lists, Hodge, for names I recognize. And on Saturday, there was a name that popped up that took me all the way back to 2021. This is when I first became familiar with this gentleman. And that's defensive lineman Yon Myonge out of the Université Laval. Now, he is from Toulouse, France. And I first became familiar with him when he was going through the NFL's International Player Pathway Program, their version of the global program, as a young man who was converting from Taekwondo to football. He was a junior Olympic gold medalist in Taekwondo and a French national champion before he switched to football in 2019 with La Courneuve Flash. 2 years later, the NFL was taking a look at him, but no team took a shot. At that point, he was about 260-ish pounds. He was missing a lot of the polish and the twitch that you were hoping to see in a convert from the sport. And he was eligible for the CFL Global Draft at that time, and nobody was willing to take a shot on him here either. I thought his career was essentially done at that point, Hodge, but he went, played a season in the GFL for the Dresden Monarchs, had some success, and then made his way to Canada by committing to Laval in 2023. Since then, he's developed his game and he's developed his body. He now stands at an imposing 6'5" and 310 pounds on the interior of that Laval defensive line, and he is tough to block. He's starting to learn how to use his hands. He's hard to push around. He's a physical presence on that interior. Now, of course, he's 27 years old and about to age out of U Sports, so that helps a little bit. But all those guys in the RSEQ are older, and he is certainly a guy who flashes at times on tape. He had 5 sacks last year in the 11 games on Laval's run deep into the playoffs and to the Vanier Cup. And he's had 3 sacks in 6 games this year. Is this going to be a huge game-breaking addition for the Red Blacks? I doubt it, but it's going to be a sneaky add if they can sign Myonge, somebody who can upgrade a portion of their roster. And we know the Red Blacks have had success with those global defensive tackles. Thomas Schaefer had a brief flash with the club. Blessman Ta'ala, who's in the final year of his contract, has been successful in that role for them over the last number of years. This is another guy who could do that. And despite the fact that he is older, he is younger in football terms. And I think there's some things to develop here with the young Frenchman.
I love that with JC's random neg lister, you're like, top college football quarterback who could be in a year or two? No, 27-year-old global nose tackle. Let's go. Like, we're really doing the deep dives. It is truly random. Neg lister, absolutely. Putting the random
in
there.
That's what the segment's for. Random.
That is what
listers.
It's for. And he does have a very compelling story. And I say he, not his name, because I don't know how to say it. And I don't want to disrespect him by mispronouncing his name on the pod. No time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2020, I dropped a story entitled Drugs, COVID-19, and Smash Mouth Football. 5 Canadians share their experiences in the LFA. chronicling the experiences of five Canadian players who participated in the CFL's exchange program with the professional league down in Mexico. Among mixed feedback, multiple athletes indicated they've been offered drugs that are banned for competition in Canada, at least one of which was administered without the player's consent. The league issued a statement to Three Down Nation at the time heralding the program. It was not recontinued when the league returned to action in 2021. JC, do you remember this article?
Well, I remember this article well, and frankly, it was exceptional reporting by you, Hodge, to get the stories of all of these athletes from across the teams in Mexico. I got a chance to go down and cover an LFA game in Mexico City with the Mexicas, a franchise that still exists, by the way. Many of the other ones which you covered no longer exist, perhaps for obvious reasons. And my experience was very positive. It was obviously Mexican professional football. The digs weren't exactly glamorous, but I had a good time, and the players that I spoke to seemed to be enjoying their experience. But other guys in other franchises that were less well run were not just having a bad experience. I think they were put in legitimate risk, and you exposed that beautifully. I know some of the feedback you got from people down in Mexico wasn't exactly flattering, but I will say this. I had people reach out to me through my global connections and thank you or thank me or thank you through me, because they felt that you did an important expose that they hoped would elevate the level of professionalism in their own country and hold their league to account. So there were people within that country's infrastructure that were glad you did this hard-nosed reporting. And I think everyone should give this article a read at some point, because some of the stories are just absolutely wild.
Yeah, I was I didn't really get a lot of negative feedback from Mexico. One of the players who offered quotes for the article did receive multiple death threats from Mexico, which was unfortunate. But the feedback I got was almost all positive. I did have some people who criticized, saying, well, you know, including from at least one player who was not in the article but had participated in the program, saying, well, you're just being negative. You just asked. And for the record, when I sought out people for the article to interview, I said I want about half a dozen, and I want it to be a mix of positive and negative. So I didn't just say, oh, I want to talk to the six players who loved this experience or the six players who hated this experience. I want a mixture. And what I ended up getting was a few negative experiences, a few positive, and a few people who kind of were like, yeah, it was middle of the road. There were things to like, things not to like. So if you want to give the article a read, please go back and read it. It published 5 years ago today. It's 5,000 words long, I think. So take some time and read it. Like be comfortable, and it's not something you can dash off in 30 seconds. But I am proud of how it turned out. And at a time of year when really a full year where there was not much for us to report, I was really pleased for the opportunity to be able to report on this extensively and do some capital J journalism. I was very thankful for that opportunity, and I really appreciated all of the cooperation I received from the many, many people that I interviewed. They were fantastic to deal with. Really, really were. Let's go to the 3-minute drill, JC. The Seattle Seahawks were called for what some might call a CFL penalty in their road win over the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday. What happened?
They had 13 men on the field, Hodge, which has given some flashbacks to Rider Nation to a specific Grey Cup game. Now, this didn't set up a score for the Jaguars. The Seahawks were able to hold them off after the penalty on what was a 2-point convert and win the game, but it was still pretty funny to see 13 players out there on the field in a critical situation in the NFL. The Saskatchewan Roughriders had Jake Mayer take first team reps in practice on Monday. Would it be the right decision to sit Trevor Harris this week?
Absolutely. Playing Trevor Harris this week would be very silly. We're talking about a 39-year-old man who you need to win the West Final. Sit him, let him start prepping for Winnipeg's defense or whoever else they end up playing in that West Final. Could be Calgary, given how they struggled against the Stamps so far this season. The BC Lions placed Canadian offensive lineman Giovanni Manu on injured reserve after his first career start. How long will he be out?
At least 4 games. That's the rule with injured reserve in the NFL. After that, he can be removed, but you can only remove 8 guys from injured reserve all season. So there's a possibility he just sits there all year, depending on what other players get hurt for the Lions and what else they need. At the bare minimum, it's 4 games that he'll be out. Ottawa fullback Marco Dubois was ejected from Monday's Thanksgiving game after the against the Alouettes for punching Montreal linebacker Tyrell Richards in the helmet. What did you make of the play?
I thought it was loser behavior. Looking at the replay, it looked like Marco Dubois was pointing at a tattoo of what I thought was the Vanier Cup on his arm, which I took to mean like, hey, look, I've won stuff before. And it's like, I'm sorry, there's nothing lamer than someone in their 30s who's been a pro for close to a decade being like, I won stuff 10 years ago. Like, how about you win this game and don't punch people in the head? You're supposed to be a leader on this team. You're a well-seeded veteran. You're getting your butt kicked on Thanksgiving. Do not punch people. That is not a big ask. And frankly, I was expecting better from the Red Blacks this week. I know they're not eligible for the playoffs anymore, but I expected to see more professionalism and leadership from some of their veteran players. The Saskatchewan Roughriders released Canadian kicker Campbell Fair after he missed 2 converts in his lone regular season outing 2 weeks ago. Did that decision surprise you?
It didn't once they brought in an American kicker. I think you gave Fair his shot to replace Brett Lawther, and frankly, he fumbled it. I think he's fumbled it in some preseason action as well early in his CFL career. It's clear that he deals with a bit of nerves and a bit of the yips, which is a real problem when you're a kicker and everything you do is in a high-pressure situation. So hopefully he can get that sorted out and gets another shot somewhere in the CFL. But I think the writing was on the wall when the Riders went to get American with their backup.
Do you think it would be fair to say that Fair fared poorly after he got his fair shot?
I believe that would be an accurate statement, yes.
Okay, just checking.
The Mount Allison Mounties finally got their first win of the season, knocking off the Saint-FX X-Men. What does that tell you about the power balance in the AUS?
Well, it means that the Saint-FX X-Men, I'm sorry, are pretenders. You can't lose to a winless team at this point of the year. Mm-hmm. This was the number 10 team on the rankings. Like, I'm sorry, losing to a winless team means you're out of the rankings for the rest of this year and all of 2026, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that is a terrible loss. The St. Mary's Huskies are the best team in this conference. And if they don't have number one ranked up or number one all racked up, which I think they do, I'll have to check my notes, they will have it racked up. They are going to finish first in the AUS. Canadian offensive lineman Theo Benedet made another start for the Chicago Bears at left tackle, helping them beat the Washington Commanders 25-24. Could he be their long-term solution at left tackle?
I think he could. He looked really good in that game against what is a pretty solid Commanders defensive line. I think he showed a lot of flashes, really helped the Bears with their run game. And I think he has yet to reach his ceiling. He's got so much more potential still. That coaching staff seems to love him. This was a really, really positive sign, and I think he's going to be in that starting role for the foreseeable future. CBS Sports Network is broadcasting the Grey Cup in the United States for the second straight year. Is that a good sign, Hodge?
I think so. I think anytime you're on television getting at least some exposure in the U.S., that's a good thing. The downside, though, is that this game will, of course, compete with the NFL regular season. And as much as I know Canadians love the Grey Cup and we're all excited about it, Americans are, I don't think, ever going to pick the Grey Cup over an NFL regular season game. They're just not. So I don't imagine this game is going to do crazy numbers, but is it a good thing to have it on in the States? Yes, I do think so. For JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. We thank you, as always, for listening to the 3 Down Nation podcast. Join us later this week for our Week 20 picks. Remember to sign up for the 3 Down Nation newsletter. Like, rate, subscribe, share, all that wonderful stuff. And we'll see you next week for our breakdown of Week 20 and preview for Week 21 in the CFL. We'll see you then.